Becker and Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Boy, that was a spirited, you just made the list. I hope everybody feels better now. Just, you know, getting that out of your system, going into the, hopefully, what is a long weekend for most. See, it's good to do that. It's good. It cleanses the soul. Let's bring in one of our favorites, Trey Wingo, on the line with us. Always good to catch up with him. Trey, how the heck are you?
Well, I feel fairly confident that the kicking woes that have been the Titans' field goal unit for the last few years may not be as much of a problem now that we've got Gostkowski down there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess really as we've been talking about on the show, it was just a matter of his health, right? And I guess if they've signed him, then they feel very good about his health because his body of work is, as we know, there's nothing to talk about there.
Right. Last year was an aberration. And he's, you know, over the last few years, he hadn't been as automatic as he was his first few years in New England. But as we all know in the many conversations we've had over the years, the field goal unit for the Titans was the grand experiment in all of 2019. And didn't they go into the playoffs with a guy who had never kicked before for them? Wasn't that the situation last year?
Well, I was going to ask you, we're going to do trivia in the next hour. I know you remember the game show Name That Tune.
Sure.
How many kickers can you name from last year's Titans roster?
Honestly, probably three, but I don't remember them as kickers. I remember them as the next guy that was terrible. You know what I mean?
Well, there was a lot of that, yes.
I mean, collectively, if we're being honest with ourselves, do we remember them as being, hey, that guy or this group of suck, for lack of a better term?
Well, suck up was one of the names, by the way.
There it is.
There were four kickers last year, Titans roster. And what was amazing is how many times, heck, we may have talked with you about this, like the weeks they went without even attempting a field goal in the NFL.
On purpose.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, we're not going down that road. So hopefully the Gostkowski thing will make it, if nothing else, more of a stable situation.
And the other thing that we have talked nauseam, and of course Mike Vrabel has certainly, you know, there's been Zoom calls this year with the media where the minute the question comes up, his head just falls on the table, and he's like, oh gosh, here we go again. The Jadeveon Clowney questions. It does look like it's, well, at least it feels like there may be, you know, coming, it may be coming to a close. It may be coming to an end, that he is going to have a home here soon. Do you believe that? Do you get that same feeling?
Yeah, and from everything that people have been saying, it feels like it may be in New Orleans. And if he ends up there, it would be fascinating, right? Because that means they'd have five former first-round picks on that defensive line alone, which would be interesting because – they now, in that division, they would play the Atlanta Falcons twice a year, who have five former first-round picks on their offensive line. In fact, the entire offense of the Atlanta Falcons this year will consist of former first-round picks. I've never seen anything like that.
Wow.
I think they have 12 or 13 guys on the offensive side of the ball right now that were all at one point a first-round pick.
Wow, good stat. Yeah, we went down to New Orleans in the first hour and talked to Jeff Duncan, and who's been covering the Saints for a long time, and he admitted to us, like, because I asked him, I said, do you feel like the Saints need Jadeveon Clowney? Like, there's a feeling here that the Titans need Clowney because of some of the losses in the offseason.
Yeah.
You know, the Vic Beasley thing has been just weird from the get-go. And, everybody feels like they need Clowney. And he said he's a little bit perplexed on why he thinks the Saints are all in on Clowney because he doesn't feel like they need him, even though, to your point, they go up against some really good quarterbacks this year.
They do, but I also feel like there's this sense in the New Orleans organization that if not now, when, right?
Yeah.
Because go back to the last three postseasons and think about how the Saints have been eliminated. There was the Minneapolis Miracle game when Case Keenum hit Stephon Diggs, the only walk-off touchdown with no time remaining in the postseason history in the NFL. Then the very next year, it was the phantom non-call on Mikel Roby-Coleman, the PI, that would have allowed them to bleed the clock and just kick the game-winning field goal as time expires, that would have sent them to the Super Bowl. And then last year, in the first round, they lost to Minnesota in overtime. Nobody has ever done that before, and Drew Brees isn't getting any younger. And the Saints and the Titans are very similar in one aspect. I think that a team that has its core in place and has a coaching staff that's been there for a while and has a quarterback that is in the system and has played has a massive advantage in this year because of the lack of reps that anybody could do with no OTAs and no mini camps and any of that stuff before they got to a delayed start of training camp. So I think there's this real sense in New Orleans that, hey man, we got close, right? I mean, Drew is getting up there and we got a second receiver now in Emmanuel Sanders that we've never really had with Mike Thomas. We have a legit number two target now. And, you know what? We think the defense is good. And if we can add another piece, let's go ahead and do that. I just get the sense from the organization is that they understand that this little run they've been on, they don't know how much longer it's going to last. And I think they're going to do whatever they can to put themselves in the best position to try and close this year.
Yeah. Trey Wingo on the line with us. Close, I would say it was more like heartbreak is what I've viewed the Saints as the last several seasons. Man, it's been brutal, some of the endings to their playoff run. Last thing on my end. Washington, which was then the Redskins, now they're the football team, but back in the day, they had that offseason, and I know you remember where they went out and they just got, it was the all-name team. Yeah. You know, Bruce Smith and Deion Sanders, and it was, they were going for the all-name team, and it didn't work. It didn't work at all. Leonard Fournette, it's like Tampa just keeps adding big name after big name after big name. Is this going to be the all-name team season for Tampa, in your opinion, or is this actually going to be big names that work out and have success?
You know, that's actually a great way to frame that because I got to be honest with you. I have no idea what to expect from Rob Gronkowski at this point, and I have no idea what to expect from Leonard Fournette. I mean, if you look at the 2017 running back draft class, I mean, there were so many good players that were taken in that draft, whether it was Fournette and then McCaffrey 8 picks later, Kareem Hunt, James Conner, Chris Carson, I think, went in the 7th round that year. And I'm missing a couple of others right off the top of my head, but that 2017 running back draft class was amazing. Leonard was the first, and he's probably the guy that's literally on his last legs already. You know, Leonard came into the league at a really interesting time for running backs when the full pivot, I think, was just tipping away from the Ezekiel Elliotts of the world to the Christian McCaffreys of the world to the guys that could catch it and run it, but be as much of a part of the passing game as you are going to be a part of the running game. And I just don't know that that's something that Leonard is going to ever do at a very high level in the NFL. Can he give you what he is? Yes, but in Bruce Arians' offense, you know, I don't know how much they're even going to sort of rely on that part of Leonard Fournette's game. So I'm curious as to how he's going to fit with what they want to do. But I have a lot of questions about Tampa because of the things we just talked about. New coach, I mean, new quarterback with a new coach. The tight end coming out of retirement. You know, Tom and all those guys would always, in any other regular offseason, they would have those passing drills and passing camps where they take their wide receivers and go. And I'm sure they tried to do a little bit of that. And they got busted once for doing that down in Tampa at a public high school or a public park. So there's so many question marks about new this year that I am like you. I have no idea what to expect out of Tampa Bay. I could certainly see everything falling into place and Brady being Brady and Gronk being Gronk. But there's another side of me that says I can certainly see it all being sort of very difficult at the start and a very uneven beginning to the season.
Trey Wingo is with us, and we've spent a lot of time, Trey, looking at especially the AFC South, this division, and talking to different people. Jacksonville is a dumpster fire, as we all know. Houston, question marks because of GM Bill O'Brien, not Coach Bill O'Brien. And then the Colts, I think we'd all agree, have certainly gotten better this offseason. When you look at the Titans roster, outside of Derrick Henry, is there a player that pops at you and says, okay, you got to spend extra time preparing for that guy. This guy scares me.
You know, it's interesting because he was the receiver that was completely overlooked in the draft because of the guy that he lined up with in college and the freak show that DK Metcalf was, the Kalen Zakarius Metcalf. was physically. But I thought Brown had a much better rookie season, and I think he's a guy. Look, give me an example, right? In the playoff win over the Patriots, what did Brown have in that game? Like three catches, wasn't it? Something like that? It was minimal, maybe even one catch, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That told me that Bill Belichick decided we're going to take him out of the game, because when Tannehill came in and took over last year as a starting quarterback, that's when AJ started really taking off a little bit. And Bill said, if we're going to lose, we're going to lose by not being able to stop Derrick Henry, but we are not going to let Ryan Tannehill go over the top with us and beat us that way. And it almost worked. I mean, I think the Patriots assumed they were going to score more than, what, 13 points? Was it 12 points, right? Was it 12 or 13 in that game? I can't remember. The wild card game.
Yeah, I think it was
13.
I don't see. No, it's been so long.
It was 12. Was it 12? Yeah. Because the pick six by Logan Ryan made it to 20.
Yeah, 20-13. 20-13 was the final.
Yeah, so 20-13. So, I think that they were expecting they were going to score more than 13 points, and they were okay with that. I mean, it almost worked, right? It almost worked because it was 14-13, right? It almost worked. So the idea that Bill was more afraid, in my mind, I don't know, afraid, Bill was more concerned about losing that way than he was the way they actually lost, which was a grinded out, very low scoring game where we had that one punt sequence, you know, in the fourth quarter that bled 3.5 minutes off the clock, which was brilliant. Vrabel out Belichicking Belichick. So yeah, that's the one guy I think that you can look to as a second year with him and Tannehill. I think that would be a guy that'll scare some people.
But do you
with a
think...
long way of saying I like the receiver. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely. AJ Brown. But do you think, and I know we always make these Patriots-Titans connections because of John Robinson and Vrabel and those guys, but do you think that they necessarily need that guy outside of Henry and then, in your case, Brown that you brought up? Because the Patriots always had, they got Tom Brady, so you're not worried. Do you think that they're starting to establish some of that when it comes to one of those two guys?
Yeah, and I think the point that needs to be taken there is that if you're going to model yourself after Belichick or what the Patriots did for all those years, is that Bill's favorite thing was having a bunch of different ways to win. Like, we can win doing this, we can win doing that. And I think that's the thing that if you're Mike Vrabel and John Robinson, the Titans, that's what you need to expand. Because let's be honest, we know what's coming, right? With the Titans offense, you're going to get a heavy dose of Derrick Henry, and they're going to try and take you over the top. Bill's favorite phrase whenever he would talk to the Patriots in the locker room after the game, said, boys, we can win a lot of different ways. And I think that's what we need to start seeing from Tennessee. Can we find different ways to win? Can we attack people differently week to week based not on what we do, but so much as what the weaknesses of the team we're playing are, and can we exploit that with our personnel? And that's the thing that I think makes Belichick better than anybody. He doesn't look at it, this is what my team does well. He says, this week's opponent, what do they do poorly, and how can I exploit that with what we have? He sort of looks at it completely differently. And I think that's the way, if we're talking about Tennessee expanding and going on and becoming a more successful and continued successful team, I think that's the mindset that they have to take.
Trey, before I turn things over to Willie, I do want to bring this up and ask, you know, obviously a lot of reports out there about your future and what's going to happen with you. You've always been great with us. We love having you on and hope that continues. But I don't know how much you want to talk about it or say about it with your future at ESPN and what could happen. But I want to thank you for joining us today and all the times in the past and for the future.
Yeah, listen, all I can say is I'm under contract for a while and we'll figure stuff out. So we're good.
Talking to Trey Wingo from ESPN. And Trey, echo what Chase said. I think our entire staff feels the same way. Whatever happens, we know you're going to be very, very secret. Well, Trey, I want to ask you about Leonard Fournette. We spent a lot of time on him this week. We even kicked around the idea of what if you put him in a tandem with Derrick Henry. How crazy would that be from a fantasy angle? But you can see how Leonard Fournette can see an opportunity in Tampa Bay, and they have assembled a heck of a stable of weapons and running backs specifically down there. So you almost can't take your eyes off of the Bucs and what they're doing down there.
You're right, and it's interesting. I'm trying to think of a Bruce Arians-led offense wherever he's been where it's been running back centric, right? You know, I mean, that's the thing that I find interesting. I think he'll be a change of pace, but, you know, they're going to throw the football. I mean, that's what Bruce Arians does wherever he's been, whether it's an offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh or you know, when he was on Chuck Pagano's staff in Indianapolis or the head coach in Arizona, wherever Bruce is, they're winging it, you know. They're taking their shots down the field. And, you know, Leonard Fournette, that's certainly not the forte of his game, even as, you know, a guy coming out of the backfield catching the ball. So I think I see him as a counterpunch more than I see him as the bulwark of something they might want to do offensively.
Do you think, like, if you were advising Leonard Fournette, he clearly had some choices. There was a lot of talk about perhaps New England. Was that the right choice for him? Would you have advised him to go to Tampa, or was there another place that you think for the long term and building maybe the next contract that might have been better?
Yeah, you know, the Patriots thing would have been interesting because this is what they try to do a lot, is they try and get something that they believe has a lot of value for a very small price. And they've done once already this offseason with Cam Newton, who, by the way, I'm shocked. I'm sure everybody was shocked that they eventually named him the starter. Nobody saw this coming.
No.
But you know, that's what they do. And I think that they might have been intrigued and might have been interested, but the Patriots are always going to do it at their price. And if they got any indication or any thought that, well, he's looking for more than we want to give him, then they were like, yeah, we're not doing that at all. We'll get you – give you a classic example, okay? The linebacker for the Patriots. Oh, his name escapes me right now. He played really well for them.
There was a Mike Vrabel guy who played linebacker for them.
Yeah, not him. A little more recent vintage. And he was actually a pretty good player. God, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name right now. Went to Cleveland, got paid, got a bunch of money, and then they cut him, and then he went back to New England and played very well for them.
Hawk, if you've heard that story before, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's what they do. So I think if they felt like they could work it at their price, it would have made a lot of sense. But you know, the other thing is, this is one of the reasons that the Bucs wanted Tom Brady. Okay, Gronk's out of retirement because Tom Brady is there.
Jamie Collins.
Thank you very much. Collins. That's exactly who it was. That's a fine on me for not remembering Jamie Collins' name. But you know, so they'll always do it that way. But Brady is a recruiter for the Bucs, and I'm sure that Leonard Fournette looked across and said, "Whoa, I was on that Jags team that had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter of the AFC Championship game in 2017, and somehow we blew that puppy."
Yeah.
Or 2016 rather, and 2017.
Oh, it was 17. And,
you know, there's a star power. Players feel that. I mean, I got a chance to work with Tom Brady, who I think is the greatest of all time. Yeah, I'm going to do that. I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, the Jags had six Pro Bowlers on that team, and none of them are on their roster today.
It is remarkable how fast that happened. Now, again, they were an outlier because they're doing it with defense and basically managing their quarterback in an era where a quarterback is supposed to be, I don't know, kind of a big deal. So that was obviously a sort of an outlying factor, but it just shows you how quickly things changed. That they had a 10-point lead in 2017 with six Pro Bowlers on the Patriots in the AFC Championship game in the fourth quarter, and that thing has just fallen apart in Jacksonville.
Did you see the movie Good Will Hunting?
Yes.
I'm Robin Williams. May he rest in peace. Trey,
yes.
It's not your fault. Trey, it's not your fault.
I thought you were going to go, how do you like apples?
That's what I was thinking.
That's down the road. That's down the road. Okay. Hey, thanks for the visit, as always. Good to hear from you. You have a great weekend. Continue to be safe. We'll talk to you down the road.
You got it, guys. Always a pleasure.
All right, that is Trey Wingo. Always good discussions with him. Back to wrap up the third hour next.